Richard Brooke Garnett, Brigadier General 44, commands the 2nd of Pickett's brigades. A dark-eyed, silent, tragic man. Followed Jackson in command of the old Stonewall Brigade. At Kernstown, he has made the mistake of withdrawing his men from an impossible position. Jackson is outraged, orders a court-martial which never convenes. Jackson dies before Garnett, accused of cowardice, can clear his name and redeem his honor, the honor which no man who knows him has ever doubted. He comes to Gettysburg a tortured man, too ill to walk. He believes that Jackson deliberately lied. In that camp, there is nothing more important than honor. J.E.B. Stuart, Lieutenant General, 30. The laughing banjo player, the superb leader of cavalry who has ridden rings around the Union Army, a fine soldier whose reports are always accurate, but a man who loves to read about himself in the Richmond newspapers. His mission that month is to keep Lee informed of the movement of the Union Army. He fails. Jubal Early, Major General, 46, commander of one of Ewell's divisions, a dark, cold, icy man, bitter, alone, left the point to become a prosecuting attorney to which he is well suited. A competent soldier, but a man who works with an eye to the future. A slippery man. A careful soldier. He will build his reputation, whatever the cost. Dick Ewell defers to him. Longstreet despises him. Lee makes do with the material at hand. Lee calls him my bad old man. These men wore blue. Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, Colonel, 34. He prefers to be called Lawrence. A professor of rhetoric at Bowdoin University, sometime professor of natural and revealed religion, successor to the chair of the famed Professor Stowe, husband to Harriet Beecher. Tall and rather handsome, attractive to women, somewhat boyish, a clean and charming person. An excellent student, Phi Beta Kappa, he speaks 7 languages and has a beautiful singing voice, but he has wanted all his life to be a soldier. The university will not free him for war, but in the summer of 1862, he requests a sabbatical for study in Europe. When it is granted, he proceeds not to France, but to the office of the governor of Maine, where he receives a commission in the 20th Regiment of Infantry, Maine Volunteers, and marches off to war with a vast faith in the brotherhood of man. Spends the long night at Fredericksburg, piling corpses in front of himself to shield him from bullets. Comes to Gettysburg with that hard fragment of the regiment which has survived. 1 week before the battle, he is given command of the regiment. His younger brother Thomas becomes his aide. Thomas, too, has yearned to be a soldier. The wishes of both men are to be granted on the dark rear slope of a small rocky hill called Little Round Top. John Buford, Major General, 37. A cavalry soldier, restless and caged in the tamed and political East, who loves the great plains and the memory of snow. A man with an eye for the good ground, already badly wounded and not long to live, weary of stupidity in politics and bloody military greed. At Thoroughfare Gap, he held against Longstreet for 6 hours, waiting for help that never came. Too good an officer for his own advancement, he rides a desk in Washington until luck puts him back in the field, where he is given 2 brigades of cavalry and told to trail Lee's army. He is first into Gettysburg, where he lifts up his eyes to the hills. He is a man who knows the value of ground. John Reynolds, Major General, 42, perhaps the finest soldier in the Union Army. Like Lee before him, a former commander of West Point, a courteous man, military, a marvelous horseman, another gentleman. His home is not far from Gettysburg. He has fallen in love late in life, but the girl is Catholic and Reynolds has not yet told his Protestant family, but he wears her ring on a chain around his neck under his uniform. Early that month, he is called to Washington, where he is offered command of the army. but he has seen the military results of maneuvering by armchair commanders Halleck and Stanton, and he insists that the Army cannot be commanded from Washington, that he cannot accept command without a free hand. He therefore respectfully declines. The honor passes to George Meade, who is not even given the option but ordered to command. And thus it is John Reynolds, not Meade, who rides into Gettysburg on the morning of the first day.